the background. It's a warm welcome to Warwick Chapman. Warwick is generally an expert political, a local political commentator, but today we're talking solar. Yeah, welcome to you. Very, very good topic to be discussing, I think. With the price of electricity about to go through the roof, and talking about roofs, there's a lot of confusion around. Are you going to be hammered by the local authorities? Is Eskom looking for some kind of, there's a tariff to pay? It's a very confusing subject, but you're here to clear it up. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, and welcome to the listeners this morning. I think that over the last few years, there's actually been some quite irresponsible fear-mongering amongst the media. My broadband online publication has really pushed the concept of the solar tax over the last few years. And it comes from a set of proposals driven mainly by Eskom, but increasingly so by municipalities, to change the way that we are billed for electricity. Because, Dave, you'll go and install a solar system, and it, my day job is running Sensible Solar, so that's why we're combining discussion about what local government and Eskom are doing with solar today. You'll go and install a solar system, and hopefully, if it's done well, next month your bill is zero or close to zero because you're self-sufficient and the grid's effectively your backup. Now, what happens in your case is that Kwatukuza Municipality has to maintain your access to the grid. It has to maintain your physical connection, the substation that you use, all the lines in between, and the links all the way back to the electricity that they buy for a net total revenue from you of R0 a month, if your system is designed correctly. And that's obviously not fair, right? It's also not sustainable. If we put you and me in charge of KDM Electricity and said, guys, KDM Electricity is making a loss. KDM Electricity should be the biggest single revenue generator for the municipality, and it's now making a loss. What are we going to do about that? You and I would say, well, we need to make sure that people who do have access to the grid pay fairly for it. And so the global standard, not Eskom or the City of Cape Town's intention to penalize solar users, the global standard is to adjust the way that electricity is billed so that you pay a slightly higher fixed charge and you pay a lower per unit charge. So that fixed charge covers the physical infrastructure that needs to be maintained to give you the privilege of access to the grid, even if you choose not to use it. And so that's really the fundamentals around which this solar tax has been incorrectly characterized. It's an adjustment, it's a change to match the changing times.
And does this apply only to those with 100% or partial connection to solar?
It actually doesn't. So on an international basis, let's say that you had a tiny little studio apartment and you were a retired old lady living in the apartment and using virtually no power, you would also pay a higher fixed charge on this restructuring, generally speaking, internationally. And unfortunately, that's not how Eskom is approaching it. And I understand why. Eskom would have to replace every single meter in the country, which would be a huge logistical and financial exercise. So what they're doing is they're asking for that tariff change to happen at the same time as the person registers registers their solar system.
So it is irrespective of how much solar. If you just have a small inverter to keep the television on, etc., but it's a solar panel, you're going to be paying more electricity connection fee
if your bill comes from Eskom.
Okay, so if you're KDM registered, you're okay.
If you're KDM registered, you're okay now, only because KDM Electricity isn't enforcing the requirement. Now, it has been a requirement in the municipal bylaws for 5 odd years now, but they aren't enforcing it. So when they do actually require it and start communicating on it like Eskom's been doing, because from Eskom's perspective it's been required for even longer, when they do start enforcing, you will have to register and you will get your meter changed.
So this is everyone that's got a solar panel on the roof or outside?
If it's connected to the grid, that's the key thing. If you're off-grid, the most they can ask you to do is prove that you are off-grid. If you're on grid but your solar panels are just connected to your geyser and not to anything else, then that's not an issue. But if you've got a solar hybrid energy system and you're connected to the grid, you are currently in KDM required to register, but as I say, they aren't enforcing it.
Okay. Are there any completely standalone off the grid electrical connections or disconnections in suburban Ballito and environs?
There are, look, it's pretty expensive to go off the grid.
Yeah.
You need bigger batteries, you need more panels. Most residential houses don't actually have enough roof space for the amount of panels that are needed. You need a backup generator. So it's only really people with, you know, FU money that are able to get off the grid. There are a few. There certainly are.
Okay.
But they're mostly, almost all of them are people who are, you know, for them it brings them pleasure to give the middle finger to the government. But a couple of them are very light users of electricity who have been able to change their lifestyle sufficiently that they can maintain long-term off-grid. But they are far outweighed by the... But the bottom line is, it's very few people.
Okay. Now, a question that I suppose you're asked quite often is, if one delays the investment into solar because the technology is improving and the cost is supposedly coming down, is it a wise move?
I think that the cost is coming down and the technology is improving slower than the rate of electricity is increasing.
Ah.
So things have really reached a plateau from a technology perspective. It's very mature now. There's not a lot changing. Batteries are the same now as they were 5 years ago. Solar panels are ever so slightly more efficient than they were. It really, there isn't a big difference. The inverter technology is all exactly the same. But the cost of electricity has gone up, by double in the last 5 years?
It appears to be set to go up again.
Yeah, sure. It'll keep going up until Eskom's able to dig itself out of its hole, and KDM, which is now in a hole from an electricity perspective. Because that's, you know, that's the, as we'll go back to talking politics, we know that that's the way the current regime solves problems, is by trying to spend more money on it. Electricity prices expected to continue to increase. It's increasing at a significant rate each month. The technological development and the price reductions are not going to keep up with the price increases of electricity. And what we are seeing since the end of load shedding, I did inverted commas there, is more businesses are interested in going off-grid. So more so than residential, businesses are having a look at the way they use energy and looking at it from a 10 to 20-year investment perspective and saying, if I make an investment in business continuity... So I don't want to ever get interrupted again. And I look at the long-term ROI, this thing makes sense. And we've taken more businesses off the grid than we have homes. Yeah. So there's definitely a very strong rationale for doing it now, especially both in a business perspective and in a residential perspective. the continuity, the lack of interruption is also worth considering.
Are all properties suited for solar panels? And I ask the question because, having done just a little bit of a cursory read, apparently in the southern hemisphere, if you have a southern facing property, which a lot of Bolito properties tend to be because the sea happens to be in that direction, it's not ideal for solar.
It's not ideal. In an on-grid situation, you get your best yield from a north-facing roof. In an off-grid scenario, we like a combination of north, east, and west. East because you get a nice bump early in the morning, and west because you hang on to the sun for as long as possible in the afternoon. And south, especially in winter, when the sun is low in the northern sky, the southern panels aren't doing much. But the reality is that they'll be doing a whole lot more than no solar panels. So if the south-facing roof is all you have, noting that solar panels are as cheap now as they've ever been, I would still do it, because you're still going to, certainly during the middle of the day, you're still going to get something. We don't tend to have that problem, to be honest. We've done obviously a lot of houses, several hundred of them, on the north coast, and we're usually able to find some east, west, or north facing roof space.
Trees are an issue with solar, and how significant, because Bolito has become quite treed,
yeah,
a bit like Joburg in the parks, for example. The trees have become a feature. I know a lot of people cut them down because they don't like them, they don't like the snakes and the other creatures, but generally speaking, it's considered by most genteel folk and people of taste to be a desirable addition to the landscape, and it would be a pity to cut them down because of solar.
Yeah, I'll take the snakes and keep the trees. I think that's possibly one of the bigger advances that's happened from a technology perspective over the last few years, is that if you choose your panel right, and they are slightly more expensive, they are way more tolerant to partial shading than they used to be. So in the past, you may not know this, but your average residential solar panel has 72 solar cells on it. If you look closely, it almost looks like it's made out of 72 little blocks. And each of those solar cells produces 1.5 volts of power. And in the past, if you just covered one of them with your hand or put a leaf over a portion of one of them, it would reduce the solar production from that particular panel down to very close to zero.
Oh.
Yeah. Sure. So, Nowadays, they've changed the way the panels are configured, and they're much, much more shading tolerant. So if shading is an issue, as part of the design phase, we choose the right panel to attend to that. And the reality is the shading is worse again in winter when the sun is lower in the sky. But during the middle of the day, when the sun is in its higher position, we normally still have a decent enough production to more than justify the installation.
Another question that is, I'm sure, asked, you must have to answer it many times, is the maintenance of the panel in terms of washing, because at the coast you tend to get quite a sticky, and then the dust and the stickiness combine to put a bit of a cover over the solar panel. How much of a problem is that?
If you are living close enough to the beach to get that sticky residue on it, you should be cleaning your panels once every 3 months at very least.
Oh, so not every week?
Well, if you can get up there, sure. I would say every month would be desirable. But again, it depends how close you are. Certainly not necessary every week.
Okay.
What's also really important is when they're cleaned, if you use any detergents or anything like that, you must use stuff that's approved by the manufacturer of that solar panel. You can't just chuck sunlight liquid or something
on really?
So because you can take the protective layers off of it, and then something that's designed to last for 25 years might not last for 5.
Oh.
So the recommendation is always just plain water and a soft broom. And then whoever's cleaning them just needs to make sure that as the water runs down the panel and washes all the dirt and stuff down the panel, it doesn't collect and build up along the bottom sill of the frame. Because what we have seen is that you get this progressive buildup of dust along the bottom frame, and it actually ends up starting to cover the cells, and they generate a hot spot along that line where they get covered. They burn, and they damage the panels, and they void the warranty. So cleaning the panels properly is really important.
So it's a real issue. I mean, you've got to get onto your roof regularly. Does that not damage the... One hears that if you know people climbing around on roofs, the biggest problem with, especially tiles.
Yes, it does. And that, again, comes down to design. So if panels are going to be regularly cleaned, we don't only mount solar panels, but we mount walkways between them.
Oh, really?
There are specific roof-mountable walkways that are designed for the kind of traffic that's
which going is on. Important, I would imagine, to consider, because to replace the roof once you've got panels on it,
yeah,
to repair or replace is a real problem. And another issue, and I just asking you because you're the expert. A lot of people have got geysers in their roofs, and the only way to remove the geyser, apparently, if it does need to be removed and replaced, is through the roof.
Yes.
Which, if you've got a solar installation on top of, then becomes a major issue. How does one then account for that or prepare for that?
I would call that an opportunity to move away from prehistoric technology. There's a lot of better options out there than the good old... electric water heater. But if you have to, then you get hold of your solar installer and ask them to remove some panels so that the other contractor can get access, and then you put them back on again afterwards.
Not a problem.
It's not a huge problem. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are the main advantages? I mean, clearly the main advantages are that you have power when the lights are out, but and that it's an electrical saving, a cost saving over a period of time.
Yeah.
It used to be a 25-year, I think, payback. Is it still that length of time?
A 25-year payback on a solar investment?
Yeah.
No, much shorter than that. On a decently sized residential battery storage solar system, our estimate is between 5 and 8 years.
Oh, really?
So well within the 10-year warranty period that a good system should be sold with.
So really the downside only is that there's a capital outlay initially.
Well, unless you finance it, we find a lot of our clients get really good rates from their banks because they're improving the value of their properties. A lot of our customers or prospective customers it's really a tough decision for them. You know, they wring their hands endlessly while trying to make the decision. But I promise you, the most consistent piece of feedback we get by far is I should have done this a long time ago. It's a no-brainer. And especially when you consider how much the same sort of people are spending on the regular without really worrying about it on things like cars. We're talking about a fraction, a quarter, or a third of what the average kind of car they're driving costs. And yet, this thing actually delivers a return. It's going to pay itself off, which a car will never do. And it's going to deliver you a return in the long run. So they make a really big difference.
Anyone considering solar that hasn't already invested might be keen to talk to you. Do you offer the service where you go out and look at the property and give an honest opinion as to whether it's A, going to be viable, and B, what it's going to cost? And would that, quote, cost money?
The quote doesn't cost money. We try and do a desktop exercise first. We have a look at Google Maps. We have a look at the roofs. We have a just general discussion with a client about what their expectations are. Many people use the term off-grid without understanding what it actually means. So if a client says, I want to go off-grid 9 out of 10 times, they mean I don't want to be unduly affected when the grid goes away.
Oh.
And so we just have to clarify that. And then we'll give them a ballpark. You know, it's going to cost you 200,000 Rand, roughly.
And the equipment, and then, is it, in the past, you had to have almost a separate room to store everything in. Is that still a requirement?
It's not a requirement. There's an interesting debate in the regulations community at the moment about where batteries are stored. But there are no... The regulations still are kind of written for back in the day when you had these tall lead-acid batteries that vented hydrogen, and they definitely needed to be in a separate room. But no, most people install them in garages, and they get signed off happily by engineers in garages, and we must talk more about sign-off in the registration process before we finish. The biggest debate is around whether or not they can be installed sort of inside apartments, inside cupboards, that kind of thing.
Can they?
Well, like I say, it's a debate at the moment. The strict reading of the regulations is that there's nothing stopping that from happening, and there are many, many such installations, particularly because the lithium iron phosphate batteries that are used are extremely safe. Far more safe than the battery in your phone or the watch that you sleep with at night.
Because one hears horror stories of if a lithium battery burns, you can't, an ordinary extinguisher won't cope. You've got to have a special fire extinguisher.
Correct. But these lithium iron phosphate batteries genuinely are the safest lithium chemistry. So much safer than your average lead-acid batteries. As I say, safer than the battery by a long way. Than the battery that's in your cell phone. And yet nobody gives us any precautions about what to do with the cell phone or the laptop battery that are much more dangerous. So the kicker around lithium batteries that's never really communicated when they talk about fires is that the source of ignition, the source of the fire, is not the lithium battery, not the lithium iron phosphate battery that we use in our homes.
Oh.
The fire always exists beforehand. And when it heats the lithium ion battery up beyond a few hundred degrees, it enters what's called thermal runaway.
Okay. So
and then it becomes an oxygen machine.
The battery's not going to self-combust.
No.
Okay.
No.
Always we've got
In fact, we have a story of a client who drove his car into one. Mm-hmm. And he really messed the battery up. And it didn't burn. It vented a bit. It leaked a bit. But it didn't burn.
So he crashed into the battery by mistake, and it didn't ignite.
Yes.
Because time is against us, what I'd like to do, Warwick, if it's good with you, is to invite you to come back for a second round, because there's still many questions, and I'm sure, you talk about the regulations, the sign-off, lots of cowboys in the industry. Mm. Pricing that is too good to be true often tends to be exactly that.
Yeah.
So there's lots of caveats around the subject, because everyone that has seen an opportunity to get involved with the solar industry seems to have done so, many of whom completely unqualified. And I think there must be some sadness around the engagement of the cowboy installer, etc. So if you are prepared to, I'd love to invite you to come back again for round two in possibly a week's time.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Dave. There are a lot of questions around the specifics of registration, who has to sign it off, what does it have to comply with, all that kind of stuff. It's a bit technical, but it's worth just helping people understand, one, the difference between what KDM requests and what Eskom requests and what you actually need to do.
I think it's essential. Mm-hmm. And also, I'd like to invite you, if you're listening to this and you've got questions that you'd like to put to Warwick, give us a ring on our WhatsApp line, 071-185-1471. Just drop your question on that line, and when we get together in a week's time, we'll be able to then put your question to Warwick, and I'm sure that'll help solve questions that aren't being asked. You know, most people sit silently and hope for the best, but always good if you are proactive and ask the question. So, Warwick, thanks so much. This'll be up as a podcast shortly, by the way, folks. You don't have to remember that number. But another number that you might be keen to engage with is Warwick's company. Won't you give us the details?
Sensible Solar, and you can call me on 083-77-97-094.
And there we have it. Warwick Taylor. Warwick Chapman. Warwick Taylor. God, he sells the meat around the corner. Hey, he'd be the last guy to talk about solar. Warwick Chapman from Sensible Solar. Lovely. And I look forward to continuing the conversation in a week's time. Thanks for joining us.